I looked around at people that were in their 40s, 50s, 60s. They were diseased, divorced, very unfit and overweight. I was like, if that's me in 20 or 30 years, stuff this.
It's just those small conversations and insights that make people realise why they need to keep pushing forward. Imagine going to university and spending $100,000 on an MBA. You still don't have any real world experience.
9 out of 10 blokes can't do one chin-up. It's a hard task and not a lot of people put effort into it. It ties into business really well. You just have to keep doing the reps and turning up every week and wake up every morning and do the next task.
I'm Matthew Fraser, and this is Amazon Ecom Secrets. I'll be sharing with you the secrets that helped me go from millions in debt to an eight-figure entrepreneur. If you're ready to escape the 9-to-5 and live life on your terms, let me show you the way. Hey guys, welcome to Amazon Ecom Secrets. My name is Matthew Fraser, and in today's episode, I've got a really special guest, John Salmon, Chief Exercise Officer. Hey mate, how you doing?
Really, really well, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, awesome. Great to have you in the house. Today, I want to talk to you about your business and also a bit about your history, how also it relates to Amazon Ecom, which I think there's a lot of synergies there to do with, I guess your mindset is probably a big one. And I also want to touch on, I don't know if you know this, but the business that you actually took a venture in, which ultimately didn't work out.
Yeah, great. Yeah?
Cool. So yep, start for me though, because a lot of people want to peel back some layers. You actually started off in the police force. Tell us that. When were you in the police force?
Mate, I started at the police academy here in Queensland in 2013. So I was 21 when I started there. I just turned 21 in May and I started in June. So young, dumb, and thought, you know what? I'm going to be a cop. And I'd only decided that like a year prior and applied and just progressed. I actually applied for the military as well. So applied for both and just happened to progress faster through the police thing, like the application process, and ended up at the academy. And I spent almost nine years there. And so this little flashback, everyone says, you did a decade. I'm like, I didn't. I like, you know, I like specifics. I'm like, it wasn't a decade. It was nine years. But anyway, so that was most of my 20s I spent being a police officer.
Mm-hmm. And what was that like being a police officer? Because we don't get to see everything, but there was obviously some period there where you thought this is awesome. And then at some point you said, this is not so awesome, hence where you are now. But what was it like?
Yeah, good question. I'd say for the first, let's go half without getting, can't remember exactly, but there was a point where I was like, this is amazing. I want to be here for the rest of my career. And that's quite the narrative or the culture internally is once you join, and I'll tell you why, and you'll find this fascinating, and I'm sure our conversation will segue in a second, but there was a point about sort of halfway through, I thought, I'm not 100% confident that I want to do this forever, but I had absolutely zero idea of what it was that I wanted to do. And the longer those like months or years went on, the more I had this mindset of like, I need and want to get out of here, but I hadn't fully understood or decided what I wanted to do. Because replacing a salary with your own business in that first instance, when you've never done it, is quite difficult.
But just top you the edge on at some point, you weren't thinking, I'm going to get out of this sort of, I guess, 9-to-5 job to another 9-to-5 job. You were thinking, I want to get out of this 9-to-5 and do my own business. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. I thought about some different positions that I could do, as in other government roles, some private roles, doing all kinds of different things. And I had conversations and had coffee catch-ups and lunches with people and explored a few different options. And all of the people that I spoke to that in the private world that weren't in government that actually had their own businesses, I noticed straight away those conversations were very different and those people thought differently. And I'm not pedestaling business owners over an employee, but I am saying that I appreciated and liked the mindset of that of a business owner, which made me think, like, there's obviously a reason I'm drawn to that. Maybe I can be one. So,
because there's obviously something in there too, John. Let me just say too, your mindset was, you know, I talk about the golden handcuffs, especially people who work in as bureaucrats. You're like a bit of a bureaucrat working for the government.
Yeah.
And you can get sort of locked into the job, the super, the career path. You think, oh, there's going to be a future here for me. But then at some point, either the job's soul destroying, you realize there's actually more to life than the 9 to 5. But maybe freedom came into it, a bit more freedom, like living life on your own terms. Would that be right?
100%. And that segues nicely into the point that I was going to make earlier was that firstly, I looked around. You're exactly right. I looked around at people that were in their 40s, 50s, 60s, for example, which is in the decade you need to retire. And I thought, well, firstly, I don't want to spend the last like 30 or 40 years of my life just sitting down, having retired, doing nothing except walking to the coffee shop. I want to actually do things and add value to the world. So that retirement thing was number one. I was like, that's weird. Secondly, I thought all of the people, I shouldn't say all, that's probably rude. A lot of the people who were my sort of immediate line supervisors, sort of within one or two ranks, I started taking notice and I thought there were a much higher percentage that were in categories that weren't diseased, divorced, grumpy, very unfit and overweight, all of those things. And there's more categories, but so not to put them in a category, and there were certainly some amazing supervisors, amazing people. However, so many that were in my sphere in the place that I was working at the time, I was like, if that's me in 20 or 30 years, stuff this. So that was one. And then the other thing that links to what you were just saying about the golden handcuffs and things like that is I started asking them, and it's available online, what are your salaries? Like, what are you earning? And these are people who are decades down the line from me. And mate, they're only, you know, let's say within 50 grand of earning. And I was like, 8 to 10 grand a year in earning, that's all you're, you know, producing each decade. So
and that was like a wake up call, right? You were like, oh my God.
Yeah. And like, I was like, and so the yeah, and the narrative a lot was, oh, you know, but I'll get my super, so that's great. Yes. And that was a very big conversation, but the super's great and the percentage of super's great, and it is, it's awesome. And what having spent 9 years there,
what is it?
If you you can give 6% and you get 6% from the government, and if you give 6, they'll actually match your 6 again, so it's like 18.
Okay. Oh right, okay, wow.
Yeah. So it's pretty good, but like that's you know what business is like. You work hard for we're not talking 50 years that it would take you to generate some serious money. So not that that's everything in life, but
John, because I've got people who want to get out of the 9 to 5. I speak to all the time tradespeople, same people who work in bureaucracies, you know, in government sector roles. Feel trapped, and they're coming to me, you know, oh, Matt, you know, I really want to do sort of this Amazon business. You know, I see that so much. And you were in that space too, thinking maybe not even Amazon, but I think if I can add this in now, you actually went from the police straight into personal training business, or where did the online business come in?
When Mel, my wife, so Mel and I have been married for 6 years now, together 8, known each other forever. She was making this granola at home in the kitchen at her house. And then fast forward, because the between details don't really matter, but we start cooking this granola stuff together, you know, at nights during the week sometimes and on weekends. And she'd sell it to people, and she worked at a health food store, was studying to be a naturopath. And along the line of we were making it one night, and I was cleaning these trays, right? And if anyone who's listening has made food that's made with like oils and honey, which granola is, it's like really sticky and it gets all this stuff around the outside. And it's like, it's a bit of work, right? Especially if you don't have like a commercial dishwasher because you're scrubbing things at home. And I remember thinking, this is really boring scrubbing these trays, but I know that all this effort in these that, you know, that we're putting into making this food everything that we produce from it, or the, like, let's just specifically talk about funds, money, we get to keep, like, it's ours. And I was like, I'd never looked at this part of it before. I was like, have you got a spreadsheet of like, do you know how much is going in and going out and all this stuff? And she was like, yeah, I did this spreadsheet with my cousin a little while ago. And Mel will happily admit, she won't mind me saying, I'm probably the more like analytical one that will break all the numbers down and things like that. And right to the little bits of like, what's that cost and what's this cost and what this cost. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, wow, this could be a really scalable thing. And so I was like, but we can't keep cooking it at home because I'm sick of scrubbing these trays. And so I also knew that it would need a decent amount of scale. I'm getting to a point, by the way. Mm-hmm. And knew that it would need a decent amount of scale to replace a wage. And yeah. So I thought, you know what? I like fitness. I want to learn more about fitness. I'm going to go study PT and start a side business. So within the same year, I'm full-time policing. I start doing personal training sessions before and after work and on weekends and whenever anyone would listen and pay me. And we start the food business on the side as well. And so like it's like moonlighting times two.
And okay, just drop in there.
Yeah, go.
When you did the numbers, John, what was the margin you were working with? So initially, you know, you're doing it in your house and you've done some spreadsheets, you've figured out what was a margin. Do you remember what the margin was?
We're making bags of granola between 800 grams and a kilo. And I remember at that time, because our purchase price for all of our stuff was so high, because it was so, we're buying in such small quantities. I think it was costing us $9 to $10, right, to make this bag, and probably selling it for, I think at that time it was like $20, maybe $19, something like that. Oh, so, okay. Yeah, so not fantastic.
And then, of course, on top of that, your time's not factored into that, right?
Correct. And that's direct to the customer. That's not retail or at a distribution level. This is direct to the consumer.
Right, but then you've got, I guess, a shipping cost in there as well. Or you
delivered
it?
Yeah, we deliver if we could for free because we're trying to get it going, or the consumer would pay for that.
Wow. Okay. So you're working a pretty, pretty tight, probably no margin, to be honest, by the time you factored in everything.
Just
at a COGS level, you were making about $10 a bag, not including everything else. Okay. And then so you're doing this for a little while, and then what happened?
Then I realized at some point along the journey, I've got all these journals here. I should one day I'll get it all structured out and we can look at a timeline. But basically, I got to this point where I knew that we decided we can't keep cooking at home. We're not making any margin, and it was like, do we keep doing this and grow it, or do we just cook it for ourselves because it's silly? Mm-hmm. And so Mel. We were laughing about this the other day. She said to me, I'm at uni, you're a cop, you're doing shift work. Like it's a high demanding job. It's stressful. You work through the night, all these things. And at this point, fast forward a little bit, we're actually going to a commercial kitchen in the evenings because it was cheapest to rent from 11 p.m. until 5 a.m. because no one wanted to cook in the middle of the night. And so when I had days off shift, when I'd specifically done night shifts, it was already in the cycle of my body clock was, I was awake. So I thought I'll just go then. And so we go there and lease this space and no one else was there because what idiot cooks food at nighttime? This guy and Mel. Yeah. And so we would do that because it was super cheap to hire the space. And it was a turning point where I said we need to stop it or keep doing it. And so I was like, stuff it. And so I made a Facebook group, made a Facebook page, made an Instagram page, invited all our friends to the group, and it was like Mel was doing an assignment in the next room, and she starts getting these like dings on her phone, and she's like, "What's this?" And I was like, "I made a Facebook page for our business." She's like, "What do you mean?" I was like, I logged into mine, I logged into yours, added all our friends, and I'm like, "Hey, you want to buy granola?" She was just like, "Oh my god."
And like, so, John, did people actually come in and start buying granola? Is that what happened, or did they?
They did. Yeah, yeah. Exactly, which is what confirmed at that stage in our life that we were like, yep, we're going to pursue this and see what we can do with it.
Got it. Got it. Okay.
And so that was the and to, in case there's any points, I don't know if you want to go away from this point or keep digging into it, but to fast forward to the next like little bit, we had a commercial kitchen where we were cooking it. Then we shifted to a bigger one with a bigger oven, like a 20 tray oven, because the other one only had 10. Mm-hmm. And we sort of kept growing and moving spaces to the point where we actually outsourced that to a third party manufacturer. And he was cooking it by the pallet load because it was obviously way cheaper to do that. Still at this point, I couldn't do, like it couldn't pay us. It was just all the money was going back into that business.
So were you thinking at this point that by scaling it to this now commercial kitchen, right, you sort of, I guess in a sense, you validated it in a small sense by cooking it yourself. You then moved to your own little commercial kitchen. Then you've had your friends come in and start buying it. So I guess you were thinking, hey, this could lead to something. You've then outsourced it into a bigger commercial kitchen that somebody else is now making.
Yeah.
And at some point now, then what happened after this? Did it just collapse or you just couldn't get the volume? What happened?
Yeah. So we started working with two distributors. One was quite obviously to us more interested. They were very health food store conscious, a lot of IGA connections, things like that. And the other guys were more the Foodworks IGA, like the bigger IGAs, I should say. And chain stores. So they were not as interested because of the shelf price that we just had to have because we used all organic, certified organic ingredients and home compostable inserts and, you know, all the works. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had thought we had this amazing idea, but like you've experienced with clients and yourself, like you have these ideas and you get attached to them and you think this is going to be great. But it's just dependent on what the market does. And so we start working with these two distributors. And the long and the short of that journey, I guess, is those distributors basically ignored my relentless phone calls and emails and knocking on the door. Like the amount of one of them in particular, when I actually got the meeting, it was 12 months after first contact. And a friend of ours who was in the food industry said, they'll take a year. And I was like, okay. And if anyone that's sort of close to me will know that I'm not trying to sound big headed, but I just love that relentless activity until it's either a yes or a no and not this like
open-ended.
Yeah, I don't like open-ended stuff. I like to like close the loops all the time. Mm-hmm. And so we finally had a meeting with them and they took us on. And at that point we'd had about 30 or 40 stores that we'd gone into and sold the idea to and were on the shelves of.
Okay.
And then in together with them, up until the point where we decided to stop the business, we were in about 100 stores altogether.
Wow. So, I had no idea, John. I thought you guys sort of got to you're cooking it in your house. It didn't work out. And then you just sort of folded up. I had no idea you went on to this extent. And I mean, I take my hat off to you and Melissa because to get that far is a big deal. Tell us now. Having now gone through that and you've now wrapped it up, of course, you're not doing it anymore. What would be the key learning lessons now looking back that you perhaps would have changed or that you would sort of point out maybe even that you wouldn't do this again?
This is a good point. So naturally with business, right, the longer that you're in it, the more you develop the stuff behind the scenes of your real understanding of, and if someone like yourself who's grown multiple businesses, multiple products, you know the lessons. And what I know now is that, you know, we started with a single tab spreadsheet that had one rectangle in it with a couple of like sums in it. And by the time we stopped, there's a 20 tab spreadsheet with a ridiculous amount of information. If you'd never seen that business, you would open that sheet or that Excel document and go, well, how do I digest all this? Like there's so much information.
Might have scared you in the beginning, John. You might have walked away and said, that's too many numbers. I'm out.
It's too many sums. It's too many sums. Equals sum bracket, you know, like stop it. So, but I guess what I'm getting at is one of the big lessons was And I don't think you would know this. It's like the fitness stuff that we've been discussing. You can't know until you've put the reps in and done the work what the journey looks like. But I think the whole, I guess the point I'm trying to make is a big lesson was the more I got to know it, the more I realized that you can only reduce your COGS so much, which is, if you're listening, you don't want that, is the cost of goods. You can only reduce that to a certain amount. And the reference I made before from the home kitchen and the expense of making it at home and buying at a retail level and trying to make money there, right down to where I can buy from a distributor or an importer, half a pallet of oats or a pallet of oats and, you know, 100 kilos of honey compared to, you know, a five kilo tub, for example, that cost can only get down to a certain amount and then it just can't go any lower. And so I didn't fully understand that. I thought, no, the bigger we get, the more we buy, the more we buy. And, you know, if you're at a Woolworths level, you have a lot of power, but a big small business is still they'd rather just not take your phone call, to be honest, some of the distributors. So
have you or did you ever consider getting a business mentor in that space?
We did and we did and we did. So we considered it and we didn't for a while. And when we did, it was really helpful because it was someone else that was completely emotionally detached from our own financial situation, our decision-making about our baby, so to speak, and how good or we thought the product was and the business was and what we thought the market thought. And it was like, it was someone that was very emotionless and what's the market actually saying? Because are they buying it or are they not buying it? And are they buying at a rate that's growing? And, you know, is it producing money and all those things? So those, having that person was awesome.
And were they the one that eventually said, shut the business down?
No, they were very good at letting us lead that decision and keeping our, so as in not making that final call. Do you want me to still help you grow this thing? Or can you see, he would use the phrase a lot, can you see the path? Can you still see the path to where you're trying to get to the goal, to the vision? And there was a time where I was, and both Mel and I were very confident that we could. And then more and more I got asked that because we'd speak about it every week. The more I would pause before I said it and have to really think about it. And despite, again, talking about resilience, being like, no, I can do this and saying yes. There was one day I just walked out into the lounge room and said to Mel, I'm done. This is over. Like it's that's it. So
we're out of here. That's so interesting because I mean, I think you take so many lessons, you know, even in my case, having my very first Amazon product, which was that car chamois. And, you know, I probably lost about $6,000, but it was the lessons that I took from it. And I just kept pushing forward and then pivoted into something different, which was still a product on Amazon because it wasn't that in your case, I guess it's not that that business is bad, right? It's just that this particular product, the margins didn't work. You couldn't get the product market fit right. You're losing money for a longer period than probably what you needed to. You probably should have, if I was there, probably pulled out sooner, just followed it up sooner. But it, like you said, though, it's hard when it's emotional. In my case, I just said, look, I'm not getting the volume on this car chamois. I'm just going to wrap it up. But by that stage, I was already looking to something else in the Amazon to sell on Amazon because it wasn't Amazon that was the problem. It was the product that I had selected that was the problem, but gave me the skills then, of course, to do the next thing.
Funny, we were just talking about the other day, Mel and I, because she's done 2 uni degrees and that's a lot of knowledge learned and there's a short amount of prac at the end, you know, before you can actually practice. But the lessons that we both learned through our own business experience in comparison to some of the conversations I've had with good friends who have gone to uni and studied business, they'll openly say, I would rather have just started a business because the barrier to entry is actually now so low. You can get in the marketplace with something that's not super expensive and just learn and test and measure and work out what you're good and what your strengths and weaknesses are and develop yourself. So,
absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what I do with my one-on-one mentoring clients is we get in early, we get set up, we test fast, we build the skills, we have the knowledge, which creates the power. And ultimately, that then gives them all the necessary attributes in order to succeed because they've got the skills like fast, rather than taking decades or, you know, to accumulate these things. I think that's what the power is with having a mentor now, which transitions me really into what you're doing now in the PT space. You're now helping clients with their physique, with their nutrition, and through full transparency, I've been working with you now. You've been helping me for, what is it, coming up to over six months now?
It would be, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so what was that transition then? Because you've essentially been burnt in your first business, let's call it, but now you're sort of going down this PT line. Did you ever have any doubt that, geez, I don't know if this business thing is going to work, or did you just pull your socks up and keep going?
The latter. So just pull my socks up and kept ultimately going because what's that?
Ultimately, you did. You're in business now.
Yeah, yeah. In
the back of your mind, you must have been thinking, I don't know, this, you know, I was in the police force. It was going so well. I was getting a paycheck every week.
I did consider, well, could I work for someone? Could I do this? But I already had this chunk of personal training clients that, so we started our food business in something like 2019 at a very, very small level, you know, like, and when I say food business, I helped Mel start cooking it, which she already was and things like that. And then a few years later, I built the PT thing up until I could resign from the police because I had a salary coming in from the personal training stuff to do the food business. And then as this food thing started to wind down, I thought, well, I don't want to go back to my old job. Nothing really lights me up. And I was like, I sat down, got a little piece of paper and was like, and I actually did this and went, how do I want to spend my time? What do I want to do? Like, who do I want to help? How do I want to help them? And things like that. And ultimately that's what kept me from going back to working for someone else. And I thought, no, I'm going to have a real crack and keep working for myself. And so, and it was amazing the clarity and the time that I got back when I was just focused on doing one thing rather than multiple things at once. And that's probably ultimately what that decision of, I said to Mel, you can keep doing the food thing if you want. It needs more than one person because it was just us two. But I'm tapping out to focus on PT and coaching, and I'm going to grow that. So,
yeah. Clients come to me now, actually. Then they'll start the Amazon journey. And the next thing, Matt, what about, they'll come to me and then say, what about affiliate marketing? And what about, you know, drop shipping? And I say, hey, let's just slow down a second. Let's just get Amazon right first. And then we'll stack the other skills if and when.
Yeah. If that product and you get the hang of this and get successful. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's trying to keep the clients on track, you know, like forget about those shiny objects. Just stay on this. You must be the same, right? When you've got PT clients trying to keep them on the straight and narrow to achieve their goals. Would that be right?
100%. Yeah. It's and that's probably the most every individual is like a big puzzle because they've got their like I'm not with them. There's 168 hours in a week, and you'd know from our work together, we don't speak all the time. We have moments where we touch base and, you know, we have open lines of communication where we can talk whenever, but that doesn't mean we have to, we need to, or you want to. It's when it's needed. So there's all those other times where your worldview or paradigm, if you like your understanding of what to and what not to do are like you've built that over your whole lifetime. And so it's like a big puzzle with each person and going, how do I get them to what questions do I have to ask? What I call them missions instead of tasks because tasks are boring. And missions feels a bit James Bondy, so it usually compels blokes to do stuff. But how do I get this person to actually like take action and do this? And for the, you know, as respectfully as possible, to make you feel like it's your idea so that it aligns with your goals, your vision, your mission, and you'll actually do it.
Mm. That's so powerful. So, so powerful, because that's exactly what needs to happen, I think, in any space, in any new adventure as well, is focus on the mission, get the goals right. And really, as long as you can push through, I guess, the adversities, because every journey has these challenges that come through. And I always talk about, within the Amazon space, there's two sort of key factors where people will most likely quit, especially if they don't have someone who's by their side helping them, like either a coach or a mentor. And that is in the very beginning phases of the setup, when they just like, oh, this is just too much. I've got to get up this company, or I've got to set up this Amazon account. It just seems too overwhelming. Now, if they can get through that, the next time when they want to quit is the product selection process, right? Mm. And so what I've done is I actually make all that really simple, because I want my people to succeed. So I come up with a really simple step-by-step guide of setting up the Amazon account. And I've got another step-by-step guide of how to find the best types of products for the Amazon marketplace, where to find them. I've even got a process where I even show people the products. These are the top-selling products that you can choose right now to sell on Amazon. And that's working so well, because it's pushing those people through those pain points. You must have something very similar to that too, pushing people through pain points.
Totally.
Like push-ups.
Like chin-ups for you at the moment.
Chin-ups. Nearly at 10.
So good. What are you at? 7? 8?
Well, I didn't tell you this, but the other day I actually did 10, but it was more like 7 good ones and 3 half ones. But we'll count it as 10.
So good. I want to dig into that Amazon setup thing, because I have a short story which will add value. But before 10, I did a post, I don't know if you saw it, just yesterday, about chin-ups. And this is so interesting. And no, I don't know if the stats are real. I just made it up. But I claim that 9 out of 10 blokes can't do one chin-up. One.
Right.
And, you know, my bet is prove me wrong and I'll buy you a steak, whoever you are, if you hear this. Because I genuinely believe that it's a hard task and not a lot of people put effort into it. And it's not about the chin-ups, as you know, because you've gone from, like, what'd you start with? One or two?
Oh, no. Hey, come on, mate. Please. I probably would have been able to do at least 3.
Okay, cool. And they're hard, right? Like, no matter when you're progressively overloading, it just always seems hard, but you just always get better.
When you're fat and overweight, it's hard. So you had this formula or something, is that right? The chin up. Oh, no, you put out the post, get a free steak.
Yeah, I was just talking about how people can't do chin ups and how it ties into resilience, and it ties into showing up every week or maybe multiple times a week trying this task that you're trying to overcome. And I think that connects to business really well, because you just have to keep doing the reps and turning up every week and wake up every morning and do the next task. And sometimes I don't, despite the business I run, man, sometimes I stand under that chin-up bar, I strap the belt on, I put a plate underneath me and I reach up and grab the handle.
Now you're talking it up.
But I think...
I haven't got the belt yet.
Well, soon. But I think, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm tired or whatever. There's all these things that pop into your head and you think, you know, do I really need to do this today? Do I have to do these 2 sets? Do I have to do these 3 sets? Whatever you're doing, whatever the program is at the time. But... and that's so relative to business, because, you know, you sit down and you go, what's the email inbox? I don't really want to do emails. I didn't quit policing to send emails, mate. You know, like,
I'll tell you, let me tell you, John, and you'll know this, but this is for everybody else. I have a personal training hack, and that is that I have a person that I meet in the gym, who's Marie, my personal trainer, my physical personal trainer, who meets me in the gym, and because I have an appointment, I get up and I go to the gym. I mean, even this morning I was like, it's kind of a bit warm in this bed and don't know if I really want to get up. But I was like, no, Marie's going to be there. I have to get up and get down there. And that is literally the reason why I've been so consistent over the last probably coming up to 2 years now of going to the gym every single week, multiple times every single week. Every session I have is with Marie. And turning that into Amazon coaching and training, that's why people hire me, because I keep them accountable. So when we meet every single week, or I'm talking to them throughout the week,
for sure,
I'll say, hey, what are you doing? But more so, I think it helps them to have me in their corner for any question that comes up, right? Even if they're in doubt. I had a client recently who had discovered this incredible medical product. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. You should definitely, and I helped him ultimately sign up this contract for exclusive distribution. And when I spoke to him, at some point in that process, he actually rang me and said, Matt, I just don't think this is right for me. And I said, mate, if you don't do this, I said, if you don't do this, I will do it myself. And I think that was the wake up that he needs. Like, whoa, Matt's willing to do it, it must be good. But it's just those small conversations and insights that make people realize, you know, why they need to keep pushing forward.
100%, man. And can you, I'd love to hear you touch on, I'll keep this under a minute because I want to hear your response on it, not my blabber. So our food product, once the e-com store was running and things like that, I got it onto Amazon just to see what would happen.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. They may even still be listed on there. I'll send you a link. You won't be able to buy it, but I'll send you a refund. But I remember that process being long, confusing, frustrating, because you'd know this all too well. This is why I want to hear your response. You'd do one step, right? And everyone knows you can go onto YouTube and there's a million experts that know apparently everything about Amazon and e-com, and whatever you type in, you can find answers to. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big believer in you'll find the answers that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. Because, and sometimes that's not a good thing though, is my point, because you can find evidence to support any argument if you're biased one way or the other. So my point is, I would apply, and then if I needed support, I'd message Amazon and you wouldn't hear back, or you'd email them, their support team, or you wouldn't hear back for a long time. And that process is very long, and I don't remember exactly how long, but I remember it being painful. And I remember when we finally got all the listings done and all of the accounts set up and the photos in there exactly how they wanted them, and all the, you know, everything has to be reviewed because it's quite specific, which is great because it gives the consumer a good experience. I was like, thank God that's done. Like, I'm so glad this is finally, and then not much happened with it. And so that's the next point I'd love you to touch on, is if you can, because once it was listed, that was like the first step, and I was drained by the process, and then nothing happened after. The sales weren't happening. They were selling in stores, but not on Amazon. So there are obviously some barriers that your clients would hit and that you've had in the past. And I'd love to hear, in case they ever start another one, and for any of the listeners, how do you overcome that with your coaching and with the services you offer? How do you help people fix that?
Yeah, first of all, I make the setup process pretty straightforward, because if there's any issues, they can call me. But I think, to Amazon's credit, I think things have improved since you were in there last as well. Like, I know that when I contact Amazon customer support for anything, they're usually going to come back to me within probably 6 to 12 hours. So I'm not waiting days and days for response. Now, that said, they do lack in, sometimes their response is quite generic, not specific enough. So that does frustrate me. Mm-hmm. So if a client had a query that was more specific, maybe rather than going to Amazon, they could just come straight to me and say, hey, Matt, what do you think about this? Now, if I know the answer, obviously I can give it to them. But it's interesting you say that, because in my opinion, this Amazon setup is actually the easy part, right? If you can't get through the Amazon setup, then maybe you're not meant to be online. But it's once you're on Amazon, that's really when things start. And I can guarantee you, if you were making sales and you were making profit, you would find the energy to keep going. You're like, this is great. And you'd be in there trying to improve your SEO, your PPC, your images, everything you can to try and optimize that listing and that product to make it more profitable. Because ultimately, I don't know if you know this, John, but you could actually sell an Amazon-based business. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So there's actually businesses that you can buy that are based on Amazon, which means that they have a product that they've manufactured somewhere. It's just selling through the Amazon platform, right? Now, the opportunity with buying something like that is, one, you could take that product and then stick it into a Shopify store and sell it off Amazon. You could, let's say it was in the United States, you could actually take that product now into the UK, into Australia. Now you're gonna expand it out across multiple channels. You could put into eBay. Yeah, you could put into Walmart. All because you've got the foundation of the first product. Yeah. And the other benefit, John, with buying an established business, and this is obviously something that wasn't made clear to you in the very beginning because you started from scratch, is that it's already trading. So imagine coming into a business, let's say it was the granola business, and one, it was already profitable. Two, all of the formulas, the distribution network, the wholesale pricing, all those relationships were already done. And you just stepped in and just basically took over. That would be completely different. Now, the difference though is that in the beginning, you start off with minimal amount of money, whereas on a business that is trading, you might have to actually put in more money. Now, that could be funded through the bank potentially, but probably likely you'd have to find some sort of funding of your own at some point, yeah, to put into the business, yeah? But that's certainly something that even my clients look at now, because when I take them through that first setting up the Amazon account, setting the test product in, sending in another test unit order, 100 unit test order from, say, China, the skills just go through the roof, the knowledge goes through the roof, and now they've got the confidence to say, actually, now I can make a decision about buying an established Amazon business if they want to.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So let me transition now into where you are now and who do you help. So let's talk about your current business, because I think it's important for people who are perhaps in my shoes, who are entrepreneurial people or CEOs who want to get in shape, because I'm now 45. I was a bit out of shape, and you've been helping me along the line. So who do you help and how do they find you?
Good question. So I help Fitness in Business, which is my little neon sign you can probably see over my shoulder, is a podcast and a program. Can you see it? It's in shot?
Yeah, it's a little bit. The microphone sort of covered up the business bit. We'll just, it's fitness. There we go.
There you go. I need good audio with what I'm about to say. So Fitness in Business helps men in business predominantly get fit, healthy, and strong, and have an appearance and presence that they're proud of. And those different elements are specific for a reason, because I think all those little elements tie into someone's overall health, well-being, and longevity. And the reason I called it Fitness in Business is because it helps business owners and business leaders. And if you're someone that isn't, and there'll be people listening who aren't in that position, who aren't, you know, they walk into a room, they're not confident, whether they're under or overweight. There'll be people that the foods they eat make them feel terrible. The alcohol or the drugs they use make them just feel like crap all the time. But that's just the way that they've gotten used to living. And so I guess Fitness in Business helps people do exactly that. Just get fit, healthy, strong, and start to, you know, feel great again. And so when they are in their business, in their family, and in their life, they're actually operating at the best level that they can, so they can do, they can focus on what they need to do best for their business.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Nancy, where can they find you, John?
chiefexerciseofficer.com/fitnessinbusiness.
Perfect. And I'm going to leave that link somewhere around this video so they can reach out and connect with you. You're located in Brisbane, but you can help train people all over Australia, right?
Anyone in the world that can speak
Anyone
English.
In the world.
Anyone in the world that can speak English, I can help.
Well, I want to say just thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today. And also thank you for all the work that you do with me. I know just as a testimonial for you, John, you've been excellent. You're so great to work with. And I know just from now being in my 40s, because of you, I'm now focusing on the things that matter, not just fitness, but also, you know, like water intake, you know, the correct water, the correct food. I've had some protein things actually in the studio here, you know, before I came over here. So thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. Really do appreciate it. And everyone out there, thanks so much and take care. Bye for now.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for tuning into Amazon Ecom Secrets.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to show your support is to give a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and make sure to subscribe on YouTube so you don't miss an episode. You can also find more at I'm Matthew Fraser on all social media platforms. Thanks so much. Take care.